Alright, let's settle in here. Put on USA. Let's see what we got going on tonight.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Monday Night Raw!
She's here.
Yeah. I can't do this. I just can't. I can't sit through 3 hours of this. I'm gonna bash my head against the wall.
I was watching USA on a Monday night when my eyes beheld a terrible sight.
Champ in the room.
When Solomonster from his couch began to cry, and suddenly, not to my surprise, he did a Solomonster bash. It's a Monday smash.
Come on,
like hour three, he will crash.
God.
He did the Solomonster bash.
Yeah.
Welcome to the 2017 Halloween episode of the Solomonster Sounds Off. And now it's time once again for the host with the most, with that devilish grin and silky smooth skin, the Solomonster.
Got a little carried away there with the intro, I see.
I aim to please.
Will you be joining me for our 10-year anniversary show next weekend?
I can't. I have plans.
You have plans? What could possibly be more important than our 10-year anniversary?
It's Bound for Glory next Sunday.
that was a good one.
I almost got you there, didn't I?
Not even close. Thank you, Zombie Solomonster. We are 1 week away from the 10-year anniversary episode of the Sound Off, live on YouTube. Gonna be talking all the usual news, taking your phone calls, giving away at least one 10-year anniversary shirt at random, maybe more. You gotta be listening live next Sunday, November 5th, at 8 p.m. Eastern, youtube.com/thesolomonster. Go there now and hit that subscribe button if you're not already subscribed. And if you can't listen live for any reason, fear not. The audio will be pushed out later that night to iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podcast Addict, whatever platform or app that you use to listen to the show each and every single week. It will be there as well. This is the Halloween episode, Halloween, gotta say it the right way, 2017 edition, here on October 29th. I am the Solomonster. Thank you to our good friends over at Audible for their continued support of the show. Another year, another Halloween show, still plugging away with Audible. You can sign up for a 30-day trial, get yourself a free audio book, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You sign up. You have 30 days to sample the service without being billed, and even if you cancel the trial before the 30 days are up or at the end of the 30 days, you get to keep your free book no matter what. Don't forget Jim Ross's new book, Slobberknocker, as narrated by JR himself, is up there. Daniel Bryan's book, as narrated by Daniel Bryan, that's up there as well. The Death of WCW, AJ Lee's book is up there, Crazy is My Superpower. A lot of good stuff. Use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I'm trying to end October on a strong note. So let's do that. And also, if you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout out here. And obviously we are heading into the big anniversary show next weekend. I like the idea of $10 or more for the 10-year anniversary. I like that. It's a nice little slogan there. But again, if you want to get shouted out on that 10-year show next weekend, as I know many of you did for episode 500 back in the summer, you can do so, especially after the bill that I ran up for all those phone calls the last time we did a live stream. It'd be nice to kind of get some of those donations back in. It's weird because I have my account with the service I use. I have it set to sort of auto-replenish when the funds get down below a certain amount, which is always fun when I get that bill the next day. So you can help out greatly if you want to make a contribution. I want to say thank you this week to John, Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Out of Control Cody Thomas, The Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson. Got a lot of old school names here this week. Aim for the Head. Andrew Jorlog, an appropriate donation here for the Halloween episode. Deathblow David Floyd, who just celebrated a birthday this week. Happy birthday, David. The Crown Prince of Violence, Colin Vignault. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eicher. The Show-Off, Corey Van Damme. The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T. Gabriel, the San Diego Beer Snob, Solis. Tyler, the Boss, Williams. The God of Justice, Giovanni Turner. Luck is for Losers, Lance Flint. Mad Genius, Matt Goss. Dark Sky, Dixon Krasinski. And John, the Great One, Ruska, who just left on his 13th deployment. And he wanted to send a donation in honor of the 10-year anniversary. Stay safe, my friend, and thank you, as always, for the support. You guys went into full-on monster mode with the donations, again, for episode 500 back in June. I don't know if we can top that. I think that's going to be hard to beat, but we can try. If you have not already done so, my full WWE TLC 2017 pay-per-view review is up on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolemonster. The video had over 100,000 views in the first 24 hours that it was up, which made it one of the most watched TLC reviews on all of YouTube. More people have now watched my TLC review than a lot of Lucha Underground episodes this season. Think about that. 7 of the top 10 highest viewed videos on our YouTube channel have come from this year alone. So I would call that a sign of a pretty good year. So I want to say thank you for that. Last I checked, it was over 120,000, so again, check it out if you haven't already done so. The final poll results, by the way, that I put up on Twitter, we had over 3,600 votes. 77% of you voted thumbs up on this pay-per-view, only 23% voted thumbs down. It was a two-match show, as opposed to what would have been a one-match show had we gotten the Demon Pumpkin against Bray Wyatt's cross-dressing fetish. So that was a plus. I thought Kurt Angle looked good, especially for a guy who's 48 years old, right, with a bad neck and bad knees, who had 2 days' notice to get ready for a match, his first match in 7 months. He hadn't wrestled a match since he had a cage match with Cody Rhodes back in March at an independent show. Now, the story is that Vince McMahon, because I didn't have all the details when I did the pay-per-view review that night, but some more information's come out since then. And the story is that Vince McMahon made the call on Thursday. They then sent Kurt Angle to Pittsburgh for his medicals on Friday morning, and they must have had real quick turnaround because later that day, once they got the green light, at least on the initial tests, they went and made the announcement on WWE.com. You know, he's older, he's slower, he's not the same Kurt Angle we saw last time he was in a WWE ring. That Kurt Angle would have been dead by now had he kept up that schedule and not left when he did. He was going down that road. But I thought he looked fine. Like, some people ragged on him wearing the Shield vest and not coming out in the end, you know, in the red, white, and blue with the gold medal around his neck. Save that for WrestleMania. You know, save that for WrestleMania. Didn't have to do that on this show. And you know what? Who's to say that that wasn't Kurt's choice? Who's to say that it wasn't his choice to wear the black shirt when he came back out later in the match, midway through, and do the Shield get-up that night? Because the guy had 2 days' notice. I mean, he's still in great shape, don't get me wrong. It's not like he's got a big beer gut or anything like that, but maybe he had a little bit of a gut. Maybe he wasn't in the physical kind of shape that he wanted to be in for his big return. You know, he didn't have the benefit of training like a madman, which you know he would, for a good 6 or 8 weeks before a big WrestleMania match. So that didn't bother me. Plus, black is a slimming color. I could see why he would want to wear it. I'm happy he didn't take any dumb risks. He didn't take any big bumps. The people love seeing him. And honestly, 4 to 5 months from now, when they're building him up for a WrestleMania match against Triple H or Jason Jordan, or, you know, after what they did on TV this week, I wouldn't even mind a Shane McMahon match. Although I still think the best opponent for Triple H must have his obligatory annual WrestleMania match, which you know he will, would be Shane. I think Shane would be the perfect opponent for Triple H. And you can do Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan after Jordan reveals that Kurt is not really his father and he just concocted the whole story to leech off of Kurt and make a name for himself. To me, that's the only way to get him out of that ridiculous storyline in a way that actually makes sense because nobody buys into it. It's all BS. So you think to yourself, oh, this guy is ruined. How do they get out of it? It's very simple. You do what I just said. We come to find out in the end that not only is Jason Jordan not Kurt's son, but he was the one who concocted the entire story and told a bold-faced lie just to get ahead. Wasn't like somebody fed him bad information. He knew what he was doing. This was all part of a grand plan to screw with Kurt Angle for his own benefit, for his own gain. So he goes heel. It gives Kurt an incentive to want to come back and get revenge. And you've got a WrestleMania match where he's getting in there with one of the younger, newer guys instead of somebody like a Triple H or a John Cena, you know, which we've seen before. So to me, that's what would make the most sense. And like I said, Shane and Triple H, I think the maybe more than the match itself, the buildup, I think, could be a lot of fun. So anyway, believe me, people are not going to not enjoy Kurt's first singles match back any less because of this TLC match he had back in October. The stuff with Braun Strowman being crushed in a trash compactor is just classic Undertaker Kane type bullshit that they've done a million times before. You know, Undertaker buried Paul Bearer in concrete once, and then on TV they said that he suffered severe internal injuries. Like, no shit, Sherlock. You know, I mean, it's dumb, but it turns Strowman babyface by default, and it gives him somebody to beat when he comes back. Balor and AJ. AJ Styles and Finn Balor had a really good match. And actually, it was Wrestling Sheet Radio said that there was an idea pitched for TLC. I don't know who pitched it, but when all of the medical stuff happened and the card went to hell last week, somebody pitched the idea, ultimately before Vince went with AJ against Finn, that would have had Finn Balor, AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson together as a team in a four-on-four match, which sounds like it would have been great for the Survivor Series, not for TLC. For TLC, I'm not even sure who the other four men would have been. Who do you put them up against? You know, I mean, but it was a moot point anyway because Vince shot the idea down. So we almost got a club reunion, a club sandwich, if you will, here on this pay-per-view. And maybe we still will one day. I like the little too sweet action with Balor and AJ, show of respect there. Called back to their past after the match. AJ on Twitter said it wasn't a Vince thing. This was something that they came up with on their own. Now, do I think Balor, because people are kind of connecting all of this, do I think Balor was punished for that on Raw the next night? Some people have emailed me asking about that. No. And I wish people would stop saying that, because what that does, when you say that, when you say, oh, well, now we know what happened to Finn Balor on Monday night. He was being punished for the too sweet. When people say that, okay, it rationalizes what they did, having Kane beat him on television the way they did. Don't rationalize that. Call that out for what that is. Bad creative. Bad decision-making. Bad booking. Call it whatever you want. Bad, bad, bad. Call it what it is. And I'm going to talk more about that in the Raw review, don't worry. One reason I'm sure the WWE doesn't care what you and I think is they just announced this week their all-time best quarter in company history on Thursday. See what happens when you cut pyro out of your budget? All you pyromaniacs out there? They also announced, and this is what really caught my interest, they announced this week that for the 25th anniversary, and I completely forgot that it was the 25th anniversary coming up, but in January it will indeed be the 25th anniversary of the birth of Monday Night Raw. And they are going to bring Raw back to the Barclays Center here in Brooklyn on January 22nd. The plan is to bring in legends from the past to appear on the show. So basically, old school Raw. I would imagine they would have people like Coco Beware on the show, since I think Coco Beware was in the very first Raw match. I think it was him against Yokozuna. I don't remember. I think the main event might have been Undertaker and Damian Demento, so I don't know about Undertaker being on that show, but I would expect some of the, you know, some of the faces who were on that original Raw show who are still alive would probably be brought in to be on there. If they really wanted to go old school, they would have the show at the Manhattan Center the way they did back in 93. I was kind of bummed when I heard they were actually coming to Barclays. I mean, I don't know if I'm even planning on going or not. Probably not, but I was kind of hoping. I mean, I for sure, if they were bringing it back to the Manhattan Center, I would have been the first one trying to get tickets to that. And it doesn't even have to be upstairs in the Grand Ballroom, which is where they used to have Raw back then. They could do it downstairs in the Hammerstein Ballroom. They're both in the same building. When you walk into the Manhattan Center on that first level, That's the Hammerstein Ballroom. You got to go up 8 flights of stairs, and they do have one tiny elevator, but more often than not, when I would go to those Ring of Honor shows, we would all race up the stairs. Upstairs is where the Grand Ballroom is, and that's where Raw used to be back in 93. And I remember hearing stories from people, I think even Bobby Heenan and people who were there for those early Raw shows who said, man, that place was a friggin' dump. They had like one bathroom and it was a terrible place to shoot TV. Look, I'm sure it's not the most ideal location, but that's why you do it downstairs in the Hammerstein. You know, they could easily fill that up. You can get 2,500 plus people in there. I mean, I know it's fewer seats than Barclays. Just jack up the ticket prices. You can make up for some of the loss that way. I think for one night it would be fun. If there's ever a night to do that, it would be one of these Raw anniversary shows, and I'm just, you know, I'm disappointed that they don't go back there. I like those kind of smaller, intimate locations for special shows every now and then, but maybe it's just, you know, they're afraid of crowd reactions to certain people inside a small building. I mean, come on, how fun would it be to see Roman Reigns walk out inside the Hammerstein in front of that New York City crowd? Might not be too fun for him. I think for the rest of us watching, it would be a lot of fun. So anyway, I think that's a missed opportunity. Tickets, if you want to go, tickets go on sale this Friday. And they're having an online pre-sale that starts, as usual, a few days before. I want to talk about this Jeff Jarrett story here up front. Jeff Jarrett was officially terminated from TNA Global Force Impact this past week, which is Global Force no more, as with the termination of Jarrett comes the termination of any connection whatsoever to Global Force Wrestling. It was less than 2 months ago, wasn't even 8 weeks, that Anthem announced that Jarrett was taking an indefinite leave of absence, or as I called it here on the podcast at the time, he was suspended. Okay, I don't care what they say, what fancy terminology they come up with, the guy was suspended. With or without pay, I don't know, I would imagine without, call it whatever you want, he was suspended. They suspended him, now he's been terminated, as has all GFW branding. I still can't believe that this company went out. They changed their name, they changed all of their title belts, all of their branding, before the deal was even completed. If that isn't an LOL TNA thing to do, then I don't know what is. Old habits die hard, I guess. So when WrestleZone reached out to Jarrett for comment, he responded by saying, Anthem is out of money, which Anthem has called inaccurate, and they're not wrong. I'm sure Anthem has plenty of money. They're just not interested in pissing it all down the drain on Impact. It's like, you know, you remember that scene from one of my favorite movies, The Dark Knight, right? Where the Joker sets fire to that giant pile of money. Impact is the Joker. And Anthem knows this, and they're only willing to spend so much on something if they're not going to make that money back. That would be bad business. The Pro Wrestling Sheet, day or two later, posted a story about Jarrett allegedly showing up intoxicated to an independent show up in Calgary for a promotion called Real Canadian Wrestling. And the promoter claimed that Jarrett passed out backstage before the match, and then when intermission began, he had to be woken up to take photos, after which they allowed this man, who they knew was intoxicated, to go out and wrestle a match. They hit his music for his entrance. He didn't come out right away. His opponent had to get on the microphone and say he's upstairs getting drunk. They had to stall for time. The video of the match is sad when you know all of this going in. Him dropping the guy in a body slam attempt didn't help matters. That was kind of nasty. That could have ended very badly for that guy. Now, there was a story in The Observer that sort of added some information to this, and it claimed that Jarrett was polishing off a few bottles of vodka. The promoter then went on Facebook, and this is what the Observer said, that the promoter went on Facebook, and I'm not friends with the guy on Facebook, so I couldn't see, but allegedly the promoter went on Facebook after the show was over, and he claimed that he had no idea that Jeff Jarrett was drunk until after the match, which is completely different from what Ryan Satin had on his site. So who knows which story is more accurate than the other, but I'll say this, you know, if you're a promoter and you know that this man is having issues, if he shows up and he's in no condition to perform, right? The dreaded no condition to perform. If he looks drunk, if he's got a bottle in his hand, if guys are saying, hey, you know, so-and-so's over there, he's passed out, whatever the case may be. How do you not know this? If you're the promoter, if you're the one running the show, how do you not know that? I think the promoter should be put on blast for this. So Jarrett finally realized he had a problem, and as of this week, he checked himself into rehab. to get treatment for what that problem is. His wife, Karen, worked with WWE to get him into a WWE-sponsored rehab facility, because they do offer that to anybody who's ever worked for the company before, and they have not been on good terms with Jeff Jarrett, but they put that aside, and anybody who's worked for the company at any point in the past, these rehab services are offered to them. And WWE has put him up in, you know, in a rehab facility. Same thing happened with Kurt Angle. You know, while he was working for TNA, he was working for Dixie Carter. And WWE picked up the tab. They worked with WWE to get him into rehab. So, look, I hope the guy gets his life in order. It's a tough disease to kick. It can be done. I wish him well. In this case, there really isn't anything else to say. As far as all the other stuff and the stuff with Impact, and, you know, you could say a lot of things about Jeff Jarrett, things he's done, things he said, whether you're a fan, not a fan. On a human level, I think you just say, best of luck, wish the guy well, and move on. While we're on the subject of Impact, according to PW Insider, the company has been negotiating with Ricochet, which was very surprising to read. Well, I guess it's not surprising to read that they would want to negotiate with Ricochet. I guess it was surprising in that there's any possibility of him going there. Because I figured he was NXT bound as soon as he got out of his Lucha Underground deal. His girlfriend, Tessa Blanchard, who we saw in the Mae Young Classic losing to Kairi Sane in the opening round, she's rumored to be appearing at the Impact tapings after Bound for Glory. So they're running Bound for Glory next Sunday, and then that entire week, they're running up in Ottawa in that same building a series of Impact tapings that'll take them through probably the end of the year. And she will be at those tapings. And, you know, that's not surprising in that I guess where one goes, you would expect the other might go. But I'm surprised that WWE hasn't picked her up yet. You know, I was impressed by what I saw from her in that Mae Young Classic match. And, you know, you would think that one day they would want to build to a match between the two horsemen daughters, right? Charlotte and Tessa. That just seems like a natural match, a natural program at some point. I still say Ricochet ends up in NXT, or they just jettison him, but they sort of strap the jetpack on him and send him directly to the main roster, and he ends up on 205 Live. And I'm not sure, I honestly think him going to NXT would be better, because if 205 Live is the best they could do with a guy like that, you know what? Best send him to NXT. Let him be the face of that brand, or one of the faces of that brand. I still say that's where he ends up the early part of next year. Monday Night Raw was live from Green Bay, Wisconsin last week. 2,300 of you voted, 68% thumbs up, 32% thumbs down. Let's start with the top of the show, with Kurt Angle running down the early card for Survivor Series. So it's Raw versus SmackDown again this year. Last year, Team SmackDown won the big 5-on-5 elimination match. There's going to be another one this year, although we don't know yet who the participants will be outside of Randy Orton, who qualified for Team Blue with a win over Sami Zayn on Tuesday. This is the card so far, and it is not very inspiring. We have the Intercontinental Champion, The Miz, taking on the United States Champion, Baron Corbin, heel against heel in a non-title match, which sounds positively awful. That is an awful-sounding match on paper. So what they're doing here is they're taking all the champions and they're pitting them against each other. So that's why we have Miz and Corbin going one-on-one. Now, I wonder if, let's say, Corbin or Miz, if either one were to lose their championship before the pay-per-view, I imagine then the match would switch. So you do leave open the possibility that they're not actually going to do this match. And instead it'll be, you know, maybe Corbin drops the U.S. title to somebody and they fill in for him. I don't know, but that just sounds like an awful match. We have the Raw Women's Champion Alexa Bliss facing the SmackDown Women's Champion Natalya, again, heel against heel in a non-title match. This is what happens when you get very heel-heavy with your champions. The Raw Tag Team Champions, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, against the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, The Usos, which is the one match I'm actually looking forward to on this show so far. This match should be outstanding. The Usos have been on fire. They're having their best year ever. Rollins and Ambrose, when they go in there, the matches they've had with Sheamus and Cesaro have been very enjoyable. You put those two teams together, whew, I'm looking forward to that one. The two Raw vs. SmackDown elimination matches, one will be with the men, the other will be with the women. Again, pending the names of all the participants, we don't know them all yet. And the Universal Champion, Brock Lesnar, will take on the WWE Champion, Jinder Mahal, who Kurt Angle referred to as Jinder Mahal. The WWE Champion is so insignificant that Kurt Angle can't even pronounce his name. The hot rumor going around this week is that to add some spice to this match, because even WWE realizes that this match is trash as a pay-per-view main event, yet they're doing it anyway. So to make things a little bit more exciting, they feel like they have to add a big name to make things interesting. And the plan is to have a special referee for the match. And the three names under consideration are said to be John Cena, who is the leading candidate at this point, The Rock, or Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now, Austin, it's always cool to see Austin. He's a lot more restrained than some of the other legends are. We don't see him a whole lot doing much of anything on WWE television. He's very picky about when he comes in, what they have him doing. If he's not happy with, you know, then he won't show up. So we don't get to see him a whole lot. I think to see Austin would be fun. It'd be a nice get, but it leads to nothing because he's not wrestling again. So it's not like he's starting something up with Jinder, God forbid. And he's not getting in there with Brock at some point. You know, it's almost like a tease. You know what I mean? Like they would be teasing something, or let's say Jinder loses, and then what do? Austin lays him out with a stunner. Fine with me. Not so sure though. You should be doing that with your WWE champion. So you know, I'm fine with Austin making an appearance. I just don't see the point. Now, The Rock would also be a big name, obviously. He'd be a huge name. But if it's not leading to a match, which it's not, then I don't see the point. It's literally just, we need a big attraction to make this match interesting, so let's just get the biggest name we could possibly get. John Cena is the only name that makes any semblance of sense in all this. And I hate it, because that sets up, in theory, that would set up Cena against Mahal for the championship. Probably at WrestleMania. I do not want to see John Cena against Jinder Mahal at WrestleMania. If Cena's going to win number 17, and I'm sure he is, it is inevitable that John Cena will break Ric Flair's record and win number 17 at some point. If indeed he's going to do that, it should not be against Jinder fucking Mahal. Please tell me that they're not actually considering this. If Cena is the referee, he could count the winning fall for Lesnar, right? Just to go back to why this makes sense, he counts the winning fall for Lesnar, and it could easily lead to a match with Jinder. You know what? Do the match at the Royal Rumble. If they're keeping the title on Jinder until WrestleMania, which I think is a big mistake, if that's their plan, you could do Cena Mahal if you want to. Do it as a big main event at the Royal Rumble. And Cena loses. I don't want either one of those guys as the champion, but I can't stomach the thought of Cena Mahal at WrestleMania. It reeks of Cena Rusev from WrestleMania 31 for the U.S. title. The American hero against the foreign menace. And I don't need to see that again. I would rather they have no special referee and instead have Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon at ringside for the match. And you can have those two get involved. Or you can have those two kind of go at it with each other at some point. It doesn't have to lead to a match, although if it did, you know, I think it would be kind of cool to have Kurt and Shane, right, after their famous brawl from King of the Ring in 01. I mean, they're not going to put each other through the ringer like they did in that match. I would hope not, but I wouldn't necessarily mind that. But it doesn't even have to lead to a match necessarily. You could do something physical with Angle and Shane. We know Angle can go, but they don't need a special referee. Now, I do think Brock is winning. I was thinking about Brock at Survivor Series. You know, Brock has not appeared on very many Survivor Series cards. Only 2002, 2003, and 2016. So in all the years he's been in WWE, those are the only three Survivor Series shows he's ever been on. And if he wins here this year, if he beats Jinder Mahal here, it would be his very first win at Survivor Series. He's lost all three times that he's appeared on the show. He's got the reverse Undertaker going. So I think he breaks that streak this year. So this Survivor Series card sucks so far, outside of that tag team match. Absolutely sucks. And I'm looking at this and I'm saying, you know, explain to me why War Games would not have been a better idea as a Raw versus SmackDown gimmick on this show. I've been saying that for years. Not just War Games at Survivor Series. I think the first time I even floated the idea, the whole concept was Raw versus SmackDown. Would that not make more sense? And you know, Vince McMahon, I know. It's a rhetorical question. I already know the answer to the question, but I had to ask it anyway. But I mean, you know, I'm happy as a pig in shit that we're getting one to take over. But it would seem to be a better fit for this, right down to the 5-on-5 format. You can actually be truer to the original War Games format by doing it this way than the way NXT is doing it. That would at least make this show interesting. Thank God we'll at least have one interesting show that weekend, but it's not looking like it's going to be Survivor Series at this point. But back to Raw, I love the 6-man tag on this show, Rollins, Ambrose, and AJ Styles, who Kurt Angle said decided to stick around for one more night. I guess he had nothing better to do. So Rollins, Ambrose, and AJ, although, you know, you can tie it into the story, you know, with what happened at the end, and, you know, Kurt didn't know any better, but now we know why AJ stuck around, so you can actually sort of explain it that way if they wanted to. They beat The Miz, Sheamus, and Cesaro in the opening 6-man tag. Styles pinned Cesaro with the phenomenal forearm. We've had this merry-go-round of replacements so far for Roman Reigns, right? Rollins and Ambrose have tagged up with Kurt Angle. Now they tagged up with AJ Styles. And both times they were a lot of fun, and I thought they filled in quite capably for Roman. Maybe they don't need Roman after all. After the match, Kane came out. He destroyed all three of them like it's 1999. Then he launched into this boring monologue about murdering Braun Strowman the night before. There's only room for one monster on this show, he said. And his name is the Solomonster. Isn't that right, Zombie Solomonster?
Absolutely.
Damn right. With Strowman gone, he demanded competition, and out came Finn Balor. And you know, when we talk about wanting to see Balor and Gallows, maybe we need to be a little more specific. We got Balor and Gallows together here on this show, but it wasn't the Gallows that we were hoping for. The one that we got was the Gallows they used for public executions. They executed Finn Balor here on this show. The man is coming off a big win over AJ Styles. The mumps saved him from what I'm sure would have been an atrocious match against Sister Abba Bray. Instead, he wins in easily the match of the night. People are buzzing. People are talking about it. He's got momentum coming out of the show. And what do? They have Kane pin him clean in the middle after 3 choke slams. Of all the people to send out there for Kane to destroy, it had to be Finn Balor. And I know, oh, Solomonster, it wasn't the demon. He didn't beat the demon, he beat Finn. Finn is a loser. The demon is undefeated on the main roster. Rationalize it any way you want. And maybe that is the story they end up telling here. You don't beat Finn Balor that way 24 hours after a win over AJ Styles. There's no excuse for that. And I think the reason that we're seeing this sudden Kane push goes beyond just them wanting to set up a new opponent for Braun Strowman to run through. What we're seeing here is Kane getting a token 20-year anniversary run. It was 20 years ago this month that he made his debut. And that's what we're seeing here. He's getting one last token run. And that's nice and all, but that was not the guy to do that with. Hey guys, so I'm inserting this into the show after the fact, literally as I wrapped up recording the podcast and I was in the middle of editing it. I haven't even uploaded it yet because my internet connection's been knocked out by a storm. Hopefully that'll pass, but as soon as I finished recording, I see WWE.com posting the breaking news that they have come to terms on the releases of Emma, Summer Rae, and Darren Young. And as I am recording this, I don't know if that's the end of the list. I don't know if they're going to be adding any more names. Those are the 3 names on the list currently. The Emma thing is, it's funny in a way, just because I have a lot to say here in a moment about Asuka and Emma and what happened on TV this past week. So I wanted to insert this into the show just to give my thoughts so I had at least a chance to talk about it. And you'll hear the audio that I recorded a little earlier this morning before this news broke, where I'm talking about the way in which Emma was used in those matches with Asuka, where she got, you know, 60-70% of the offense in those matches, which she should not have gotten in Asuka's first matches. But some people maybe were thinking that Emma was going to get some sort of a push. And as you'll hear in the audio, I didn't feel the same way, which made it all the more maddening that they would, you know, put Asuka in a situation where she would have to fight from underneath and be on defense against somebody who has really consistently been so poorly used by WWE over the years. It's actually, this makes it even more astounding what they did this past week. Now, we don't know if perhaps Emma asked for this. We don't have any details yet. This is all breaking news right now. It's entirely possible that Emma went to them and said, I want out. Or if the company did it, it just makes their decision to book her in that way against Asuka all the more puzzling. All the more puzzling, because if this was their call, if this was their decision and not hers, then there's no reason for either one of those matches to have gone longer than 30 seconds. So, without knowing all the details yet, I'll reserve final judgment, but I'll tell you right now, if it comes out that this was their call, this was a WWE call and not an Emma call, then what they did with Asuka this past week is even more brain dead than I thought. And Emma is somebody who is very talented and who was never used to her full potential. I think back to that match that she had with Paige at that first TakeOver Arrival show back in, I guess that would have been 2014, and there was a lot of hope that perhaps these are two of the women who will lead this next wave of women's wrestling once they make it to the main roster, and it hasn't exactly worked out that way. Paige got a lot more chances and was a bigger star than Emma was. But Emma never really had the chance to show, I think, what she is fully capable of. Hopefully now she has that chance if she wants to stay in wrestling. Hopefully she'll go somewhere and she'll be happy and successful and she'll be able to, you know, put on a show in a way that maybe she wasn't able to in WWE. It's a waste of talent, but without knowing who made the call here, it's hard to pass final judgment. But boy, does that make the decision to book those two matches with Asuka the way they did even more puzzling. Summer Rae is another one. I was a Summer Rae fan. And I'm going back to her days in NXT, and you guys know this because I've talked about this here on the show before. I'm not just pulling this out of thin air. Summer Rae got better. The more I saw her in NXT, she got better. Her matches actually grew better each time that I saw her, and it was the little things that she would do. So even if she not necessarily was in a hold, but if she was applying a hold, she would scream. She was very animated during her matches. She was very, good heel. And I remember when she came to the main roster, at no point from match one all the way to all the other matches that she had, at no point in her time on the main roster that I can recall, did she ever really have a chance to have a match just the way that she did in NXT. And again, to showcase that she actually was a pretty decent wrestler. They used her as a valet. They used her for comic relief sometimes. They did a lot of things with her, but again, somebody who never really had the chance to go in there and show what she can do when it came to an actual wrestling match. And people kind of shit on her in a way and said that they never really looked at her as being a good wrestler. We never really got to see enough of her to judge one way or the other, but just based on what I saw from her in NXT, I can tell you she never had the chance on the main roster. I sound like a broken record, don't I? I mean, have we not been through this time and time and time again about the whole NXT to main roster business? I don't know how many times I could say this before I turn blue in the face. I mean, you may as well just play those words on a loop. Never had the chance on the main roster. Never had the chance on the main roster. I mean, how many times have we gone through this? And she's just another example. So I'm sorry to see her go. She's been on the shelf now for over a year. She had neck problems and back problems last year. I think also some kind of issue with her elbow. She was all banged up. She's been at the Performance Center since around May of this year. She was posting photos from the PC back in training and stuff. I don't know if she was cleared at that point. I would imagine by now she was cleared to come back. I just assumed that they were just waiting for a spot for her. And I didn't think it looked too good for her either, because Paige is also waiting to come back. And so if you're going to take the two of them, who's got the shot at coming back first and getting plugged into an open spot on that Raw roster? It's going to be Paige. It's not going to be Summer Rae. And they're both part of Raw. So I already thought, I got a question from somebody in the mailbag just this week, in fact, that I almost included here in the show. It's a good thing I didn't. About Summer Rae. When is she coming back? Well, now we know the answer. But I think that's an important point. And maybe that went into their decision-making and letting her go. Maybe they just didn't have a spot for her. all the new women they brought in from the Mae Young Classic that are now down at the Performance Center in NXT. And, you know, you look at that Raw roster and Paige is waiting in the wings. And if you had to pick one over the other, you know, you're probably going to go with Paige. So it might have just been a matter of the numbers here, and that's why they let her go. Darren Young, I mean, what can I say? They were never going to do anything with Darren Young. Darren Young was doing the tag team thing as the primetime players for a while with Titus O'Neil. They got away from that. They split them up. And he got hurt. And I think he got hurt twice, right? He came back. He had Bob Backlund with him. That never went anywhere. Then he got hurt again. I think it was in a match on Main Event. That was a pretty nasty injury. I think his arm got hyperextended. It was like an elbow injury. He was out for a number of months. And only recently, in the last maybe couple of months, did he make his return. But he never made it back to TV. So I think he was wrestling on some house shows. But you didn't really see him. He was never reintroduced on TV, at least not on Raw or SmackDown. I don't know what's going on the Main Event or any of those shows. But it was very clear that they were not going to do anything with him. The pairing with Bob Backlund was long over. And what do? You know, with a guy like that, if you're not going to use him, you may as well cut bait. So I feel bad for the guy. I hate seeing people lose their jobs. But the reality is he was just a warm body on the roster that they just were not going to do anything with. Here's a guy who worked his ass off. I remember looking at him in these videos. He put together, I think, his own videos back when he was hurt the first time and he was rehabbing to come back. I think he hurt his knee. And they were very slickly produced. I mean, I don't think it was a thing that WWE produced, but he put a lot of effort into them, showing him training for a comeback, and he sort of transformed his body, not the way that Jinder Mahal has transformed his body, but nonetheless, he transformed his body, and you wanted to see the guy succeed. You wanted to see the guy do well, and just never happened, you know, and it never, and I think his ceiling was only going to go so high anyway, because you look at the quality of talent they have on the roster, and there's really no spot for him. So I don't know what happened with Emma, but I think with Summer and Darren Young, it came down to numbers, and they just didn't have spots for these people. And so, let me just check here. I got another message. I thought we had another release. But I just think it was a case of them not having enough space. But this is all speculation because it's Sunday afternoon. The news just broke. I'm sure in the days to come that we'll learn more about this. But anyway, I wanted to just insert this into the show. This is breaking news, and it does sort of date some of what I'm about to talk about. But I wanted to make sure I had a chance just to talk about it, just to give you my thoughts and let you know that I am aware, even though I'm going to talk about her more in a second here, I am aware that Emma has been released. All the more puzzling what they did with Asuka this past. What are these people thinking? That's all I can say. Are they even thinking? Anyway, enjoy the rest of the show. As I predicted during my TLC review, like clockwork, it's so easy to predict these things. We got a rematch from the night before between Asuka and Emma. Asuka won. But again, Emma took most of the match before Asuka won with the Asuka lock. And because she mostly played defense in both of these matches, that brings me to Edge and Christian. Edge and Christian on their podcast said that they don't see the appeal with Asuka. They don't get it. They talked about her first two matches on the main roster. This is what Edge said. Edge said, "I don't get the Asuka thing. I really don't. Like, she's fine and she's solid, but I don't know. I've never really understood the hype. More than that, what I didn't get was using an ankle lock on the night that Kurt Angle is stepping back into a WWE ring for the first time in 11 years, and it's actually being used in the main event as something pretty pivotal. Why do you do that as a spot that goes nowhere?" He makes a very good point about the ankle lock stuff. I was thinking the same thing watching the show that night. She actually went for it twice, if I remember correctly. She might have actually applied the ankle lock twice in that match. So I thought the exact same thing. You've got Kurt Angle in the main event. Why are you using an ankle lock? That move should have been off limits to everybody. And maybe that's not her fault, although she should have known better, even if that is a move that she uses. And I don't remember her using it that much, but that's something that should have just been said across the board. You know, you stay away from this move. Don't do this. Don't do that. We're saving it for Kurt. We're saving it for the main event. And it really didn't. It didn't factor into the finish of that match. And you don't do that on a show where Kurt Angle is, like Edge said, having his first match back in 11 years. So he's absolutely spot on about that. Now, Christian added his two cents in here. He said, "I've seen clips, and I've never seen a full Asuka match. So maybe I've seen one or two, but I think that when there's a lot of hype and that sort of thing, it makes it almost harder sometimes for the talent to live up to the packages and to the hype, and they're expecting something completely different than something they've seen before. And that's really hard to do. Now, he did go on to praise her for her character and her body language. This is exactly the sort of thing I would expect. I don't even blame them. I mean, first of all, it's their opinion, and they are more than entitled to their opinion because, you know, God, I mean, you put the two of them together, the two of them probably had 30, 35 years combined or something in the wrestling business. So I respect their opinion. I think Edge makes a great point about the ankle lock thing. But this is exactly what I would expect from two people who admit they haven't seen much of her work before. That's exactly the sort of thing I would expect. They haven't really seen her work from NXT. They're going by what they saw in her first two matches on the main roster. There was nothing special about those two matches with Emma. I don't blame them. If I was watching her for the first time and this was my first exposure to her, I would think the same thing. And I think it's a great reason to advocate for the use of jobbers, which they were doing for a while, and then they stopped for whatever reason. But that's how we ended up with James Ellsworth, right? They were feeding enhancement guys to Braun Strowman week after week, which helped Strowman get over as a monster. And then the feud with Roman Reigns just put him over the top. But it was getting over by just destroying people and throwing people around week after week that got Strowman over as an unstoppable monster. Look at Ryback. They fed him jobbers week after week. Two jobbers a week. Three jobbers a week. And by the time he got to that Hell in a Cell match with CM Punk, before he lost, he was the hottest thing in wrestling. Gee, I wonder why. I wonder why that was. You know, I have a t-shirt in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. It has this written on it, but I've been saying this for years. This isn't rocket science. This isn't rocket science, people. You don't need a PhD. You don't need to get your master's degree to figure out how this works. It's really not that hard. It would have made a lot more sense to feed some jobbers to her for a few weeks. You know, like it's like somebody ripping the wings off a fly. That's what Asuka should have been doing. She should have been ripping the wings off a fly for weeks. Let her toy with her opponents. Let her show off her personality while she dismantles a bunch of people and shows off her moveset. I think that, as much as anything, was the point of those old jobber matches. It wasn't just to show dominance, which Asuka showed none of in these matches with Emma, especially that pay-per-view match, but to showcase your moveset. That's why they would do, you know, all those matches on Raw and Superstars and Challenge back in the day, and Razor Ramon is in the ring and he's slapping guys around and he gives them the back suplex and the fallaway slam, and then he finishes them off with the Razor's Edge. He got that shit over week after week after week. He beat people with it week after week after week. Now, I guess you could make the argument that Emma is an enhancement talent in a way. God knows she's been booked like one for years now, but she's still an established personality. I mean, I never got debuting, and they've been doing this since the mid-2000s, the mid to late 2000s. This is not a new phenomenon here. At some point, they started doing this, and I think it's a big mistake. I never understood, you know, debuting somebody against somebody who's already established, unless the idea is for them to be dominated in 30 seconds, and you can't do that with everybody. It's like the 1-2-3 kid pinning Razor Ramon that one time on Raw. You couldn't do that with other people once you did it with him. It worked that one time. And it worked because we had never seen that before. That's why that worked. And they kind of did it again a couple of years later with Barry Horowitz and Chris Candido. But every now and then, I think it's fine if the idea is we are going to debut somebody against an established personality and they're going to beat them in 30 seconds and people are going to go, wow, and we're going to really heat this guy up right out of the gate. Otherwise, you don't do that. You don't put them in there with an established person on week one. I never understood that. But I assume that was the role that Emma was going to play. And then they had, I hesitate to even call it a competitive match because Asuka was working from underneath practically the entire time. You know, and I'll admit, I mean, I watched that pay-per-view match and I thought, wow, they're actually giving Emma a lot of offense here. Emma took a good 60 to 70% of that match. They had Asuka fighting from underneath. People have been complaining for a long time now about how poorly they've used Emma on TV. Hey, maybe this is a sign that the tide is finally turning. And then I smacked myself for even falling for that. They're not pushing Emma. What, are you out of your mind? They have no plans for Emma. So what you're left with is this new person who had to fight from behind just to get a win over somebody who lucked into a win even to get the match with Asuka in the first place at TLC. And you've got Christian here admitting, that he's really never seen a full Asuka match outside of a few clips here and there.
Well, you know, I've only really seen clips of her. I've seen snippets here and there, and, you know, I've never really seen a full match of hers. You know?
Yeah, no shit. No shit he's going to look at her like that after this week and think, well, what's all the hype about? I don't see what the big deal is. But when you're out there playing defense against a woman who's lost all but four matches on TV this year, that's her record. You're going to have a lot of people thinking the way that these two do. Now, it's only week one, right? It's only 1 week so far. But if she's not one of the sole survivors for that Raw women's team at Survivor Series, then these people need to get their heads examined. And there was one moron who tagged me in a tweet during the week. He doesn't even listen to the show or follow me or anything. But somehow I got tagged in this nonsense. And he's calling people who like Asuka smarks because I guess she's Japanese, I guess. And he says smarks like everything from Japan. Meanwhile, this guy has a picture of The Rock as his avatar. And he's quoting wrestling catchphrases on his timeline. Sit the fuck down. Sit the fuck down with that nonsense. Calling other people marks and smarks when you've got another man as your profile picture and you're quoting Psycho Sid. You don't get to sit at the adult table when you spew nonsense like that. Go stand in the corner and face the wall. So, even though Kurt Angle already confirmed the match at the top of the show for Survivor Series, Paul Heyman was there with Brock Lesnar to accept Jinder Mahal's challenge, and he just buried this guy. 6 feet on. It was glorious. Heyman said that when I think of WWE champions, I think of Bruno Sammartino and Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and John Cena and Brock Lesnar, not Jinder Mahal. He called him a consolation prize champion, offered to SmackDown when Shane and Daniel Bryan realized they got the shaft in the Superstar Shakeup. I know they were just playing off what people really think and have really been saying about the guy, but man, did this hit close to home. Because everything he said was true. And Brock, by the way, I don't know what his deal was, but Brock looked like he was having fun when Heyman was in there doing his thing, and he was smiling and popping up and down. But as soon as Heyman ended, as soon as Paul Heyman was finished speaking, Brock could not get out of there fast enough. He got out of the ring as quickly as I've ever seen him. He almost dropped the title. He caught it in midair. He just speedwalked to the back. He's like, I got a flight to catch. Adios. He could not wait. He could not be any less interested in this Jinder Mahal nonsense. Could not wait to get out of there.
Maharaja!
Alicia Fox beat Bayley and Sasha Banks to become team captain for Team Raw at Survivor Series. Supposedly this spot was going to go to Nia Jax had she not taken a little break. Nia will probably be on the team at Survivor Series. She will be back soon, but Alicia now will be the captain. And then we had the big show-closing invasion angle. As invasion angles go, I thought this was well done. Shane came through the crowd with AJ Styles, Nakamura, Bobby Roode, Dolph Ziggler, Rusev, Baron Corbin, The New Day, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Natalya, who grabbed herself a handful of Zack Ryder's crotch when they were backstage. She claims it was an accident. Sure it was. There were a bunch of others out there with him. Shane told Angle that they were under siege. That's the new catchphrase, by the way. They must have said, between Raw and SmackDown, we must have heard the phrase under siege at least 5 dozen times. Maybe the plan, since he's got 1 foot out the door anyway, is to just have Shane replace Daniel Bryan with Steven Seagal. I don't know. One of my favorite movie quotes, by the way, you know, as I'm watching this on Monday, it reminds me, oh, under siege. I don't ever remember seeing the first one, but I definitely saw the second Under Siege movie, which was on a train, and one of my favorite movie quotes. Now, you would think this have been a lot of great movies, a lot of award-winning films, fuck all that. The one movie quote that always stands out to me came from Under Siege 2, because of how true it is. And there's a scene in the movie where one of the bad guys tells somebody, "Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups." And to this day, that is one of the truest quotes I have ever heard. Remember that. Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. So Angle went to go leave, and Shane told him, told all of his guys to go get him. And so they all marched backstage, and they first beat up Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews, and they marched into one of the locker rooms, and Chad Gable made a beeline at Jason Jordan, who was sitting there. I like that. I like that little attention to detail. Matt Hardy and Finn Balor came out of a bathroom and they tried to stop them, but they were overwhelmed. This just was not Finn Balor's night. There was a confrontation in the hallway with the women, and the SmackDown ladies left the Raw ladies laying. Rollins and Ambrose were ready to strike. They too were quickly overwhelmed. So they had Kurt Angle hostage. They brought him back down to the ring where Shane got in his face and said, "At Survivor Series, bring your gold medal, bring what's left of your roster, and we'll finish what we started." Again, I thought this was well done, if not a little too contrived. I haven't sensed any tension whatsoever up until this week between the two brands. In fact, Shane just lent AJ Styles to Kurt Angle in a show of good faith. Suddenly he's leading an invasion and holding Kurt Angle hostage in the ring. I don't know how we went from point A to point B other than, hey, it's October. It's October. I don't know what month it is anymore. It's going to be November. It's Raw versus SmackDown. That's about it. That's all I could come up with. But they have a pay-per-view to promote, and I thought they did a good job with this. The question now is, when does Raw strike back? They didn't do it the next night, which they should not have. Why blow your load in 1 week when you can drag it out? They don't even have all their people back yet, right? You know they're going to want Roman Reigns to be part of a Raw invasion. I mean, come on now, right? Once they get him back, they'll do it. One last thing. As we come to the end of October, with one more Raw to go with the pink rope for breast cancer awareness, how unfortunate that Hell in a Cell happens to fall in October every year, the same month as breast cancer awareness, because nothing screams demonic structure more than pink ropes. But as we wind down, Vice Sports ran a story this week on something that I and a lot of other people have been talking about for the last few years now, which is WWE's whitewashing of the Ultimate Warrior's past, and citing him as this paragon of virtue and using his name to champion these philanthropic efforts of theirs after some of the hateful things that this guy has said over the years. When Bobby Heenan died recently, and I talked about it on the show I did on YouTube on Bobby Heenan, you know, the comments that Warrior made about Bobby after he was first diagnosed with breast cancer. Just horrible, horrendous stuff. And I know Bobby was no fan of his, and Bobby had some things to say about him on that DVD hit job they did. So I can understand him being upset, but to say the things he said about somebody who had just been diagnosed with cancer was quite appalling. There was the time WWE invited him to be on their old Bite This web show, which Todd Grisham and Draz had hosted at the time. And he didn't go on the show, but he wrote this lengthy response. And in the response, he called them the queer and the cripple. That was his name for Todd Grisham and Draz. The stuff he said about the victims of Hurricane Katrina. I mean, you can go down the laundry list of horrible things this guy has said. And to then see WWE twist his words on what he wanted the Warrior Award to be. And it ends up being an award given to people who've gone through tough challenges in their life. One of whom, by the way, the person that they just gave the Warrior Award to this year, Eric LeGrand, who actually was crippled in a football accident. For them to create an award like that and name it after this guy of all people, it'd be like inducting Dr. Amen into the Hall of Fame 1 year and getting CM Punk to do the induction and say nothing but wonderful things about what a great doctor he is. He's the last person in the world you would expect to be up there saying nice things about the guy. But, you know, with the Warrior, look, I grew up on the guy. Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior, Andre, Million Dollar Man, right? That was my childhood. I grew up on the guy. I was very upset when he died. Just the way it all happened and as quickly as it happened. And it was just a very sad situation to see him in the ring one night getting an ovation and the next day he's dead. Now, you know, his wife claims that he changed. She can't vouch for all the old... Now, he didn't marry his wife. I don't think he and Dana married until the late 90s. But a lot of the comments that I just mentioned, if not all of them, came after the two of them were married. But she claims that he changed after talking to his daughters and he evolved. Look, we're never going to know. She's the wife. She's not going to go out and say bad, horrible things about her husband. I would expect her to say nothing less. But I could tell you that we certainly never got to hear or see any of that ourselves if he did change. But the story, the Vice Sports story, is spot on about how they've just whitewashed this guy's background. You know, it's bad enough they partner with Komen every year on the breast cancer stuff instead of some other organization. That's bad enough. one of the best things I ever heard Warrior say was that when, you know, the award that he floated that year when he went into the Hall of Fame, that the award at the Hall of Fame should be called the Jimmy Miranda Award, and it should honor people who work behind the scenes for the company. He and I agree on something. That's a great idea. And if the company ever did want to back away from him, because we see it a lot now. You say the wrong thing, people's pasts sort of, you know, resurface, and with social media and everything, we've seen it with all these sexual harassment stories in the news this past week. All the media people that have been, you know, outed as being scumbags and all that stuff, that Mark Halperin guy and Harvey Weinstein and all these other bozos out there, right? It doesn't take a whole lot of pressure to pressure companies into making changes or backing away from people and stuff. And who's to say that that doesn't end up happening at some point with the Warrior? And if it does happen, I think the right thing to do and the thing that makes the most sense is to just take that award and change it and call it the Jimmy Miranda Award and actually honor what Warrior wanted to do, because it was one of the few sensible things that he actually said. And now, a chat with legendary actor Jeff Goldblum.
And Breezango Fashion Patrol?
Yeah, it's a wrestling thing.
You wrestle?
No. Well, only on weekends, but I report on it.
You report on wrestling?
Yes.
Where does wrestling go on in the United States?
Oh, all over the world. I mean, in fact, TNA Global Force Impact is having its Bound for Glory show next weekend up in Ottawa.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not, they're still in business.
No kidding.
I know, right?
I'll be darned.
SmackDown Live, by the way, that credit to WrestleTalk TV for that original clip. One of their people had the chance to interview Jeff Goldblum for his new movie, and he was fascinated by this guy's Breezango shirt. So that's where that exchange came from. But SmackDown Live this past week, Twitter poll, over 1,600 votes, 58% thumbs up, 42% thumbs down, so a decidedly poorer score than what Raw got this week, although Raw did have the big invasion angle and SmackDown did not. I like that they left Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn out of that invasion angle, by the way. It made sense. Well, I guess Owens had a family issue. He wouldn't have been there anyway, but it made sense because of their issues with Shane that they would not be there to represent him. Zayn came out at the top of the show here to confront Shane and said, look, no hard feelings. And Shane said, well, there are hard feelings, and I'm going to put you in a match against Randy Orton, with the winner qualifying for a spot on Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. Because Sammy just assumed, he's like, look, I just want you to know, Kevin and I would be more than happy to captain the team at Survivor Series. And that's when Shane said no, and he made this match with the winner of the match becoming team captain. Meanwhile, they're already building tension between Shane and Daniel Bryan. Bryan was very upset with Shane for not giving him a heads up about the attack on Raw. He knew nothing about it, and nor does he agree with it. So they're already planting the seeds of dissension here for the first time between Shane and Bryan. Sin Cara, who already has a count-out victory over the United States champion, Baron Corbin, can now add a victory by disqualification to that list after Corbin was DQ'd for punching him in the corner and failing to break the referee's count. Ah, yes, the old kicking too much ass finish. He gave Sin Cara the end of days on the floor after the match. This sucked. Jinder Mahal came out to proclaim that the Maharaja era has only just begun.
Maharaja?
I'm very much in a Maharaja mood this week. What can I say? AJ Styles beat one of the Singh brothers, Sunil, with the calf crusher. Next week, AJ gets to face Samir. Becky Lynch beat Charlotte, Naomi, Carmella, and Tamina by tapping out Carmella to become team captain for Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. And Randy Orton pinned Sami Zayn with an RKO after Kevin Owens ran out, and with the referee distracted, Orton gave Sami a low blow. Payback for what Sami had done to him. He did the same thing to him about a week or two back, and then he hit the RKO. So Randy Orton will be the team captain at Survivor Series for Team SmackDown. This Tuesday, it's Kevin Owens against Shinsuke Nakamura in another Survivor Series qualifying match. I assume Nakamura picks up the win there, and that way Owens and Sami have both failed to qualify, and they either do something else on the show or they cost Team SmackDown the match. That would be my guess. I would expect Raw to win anyway, just because SmackDown won last year. I don't see them winning 2 years in a row. I could be wrong, but that's my early prediction. is that Owens and Zayn, who don't qualify, probably cost them the match in some way, and Team Raw picks up the win. And Dolph Ziggler, coming up this Tuesday, will take on Bobby Roode in a 2 out of 3 falls match. So we are getting Roode and Ziggler on Halloween, like I pitched about a month ago. We're just not getting the stipulation I was hoping for. I really hope they do something to make that show feel like a real Halloween special. I know they're not going to change the set or anything like that, but yeah, you could have people dressed up, you could have special Halloween graphics, and you can do, you know, there's stupid little things that you can do. To me, you can't do a show on Halloween night and not make it fun, so I hope they do. This week's Social Media Savagery Award. It's not a tweet, so I can't call it Savage Tweet, so we're just going to call it Social Media Savagery. It goes to Kevin Owens for his Instagram response to one Randy Orton. Orton posted a photo of what looks to be an Egg McMuffin and hash browns from McDonald's. I didn't even know what this hash brown thing, I'm looking at this and I'm like, is that like a giant like chicken tender? I didn't even know what the hell it was. I had to look up photos and figure out. I haven't even been to McDonald's. I couldn't tell you how many years it's been. So if I'm getting my McDonald's food confused here, somebody I'm sure will school me. I'm pretty sure it was an Egg McMuffin and a hash brown. But anyway, Orton posts this photo and he says, "Don't judge me. I needed the calories. Also, I'm training for a potential confrontation with @FightOwensFight, implying that he is fat." And that would have earned Orton the award this week, but one does not burn Kevin Owens on social media without expecting an appropriate response, and he did not disappoint. Kevin Owens replied back, "Well, I've been preparing for a potential battle between us two, buddy. I've watched paint dry today. I've got you all figured out." Blandy Orton, indeed. Kevin Owens wins that round.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week, Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan have finally formed a team, and it's not off to such a great start. They lost to Tino Sabatelli and Riddick Moss. Lorcan was pinned after being trapped in a gory special. Kind of was setting it up the way that Cage sets up Weapon X in Lucha Underground. And then he was bulldogged. The other guy came off the ropes and he was bulldogged into the mat for the pin. Got to get the new guys over. Nikki Cross won a Battle Royal to earn the final spot in the NXT Women's Championship Fatal 4-Way at TakeOver War Games. William Regal allowed her into the Battle Royal even though she lost one of the qualifying three-way matches. When Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly sent Tenara Conti, right? That's her name? They sent Tenara Conti down to cost Nikki the match. So she got a second chance here, and she made the most of it. She also dressed up as No Way Jose at the NXT Live event on Friday night. They had a lot of women dressed up in Halloween costumes, and you should see this photo of Nikki Cross dressed as No Way Jose. No Way Nikki. That's what John Cena said to his girlfriend for years about marriage, and look at him now. Nikki eliminated Tenara Conti first to get her revenge. A lot of Mae Young Classic participants here in this match. Dakota Kai, Rhea Ripley, be still my heart. Lacey Evans, Abby Laith, Santana Garrett, Sage Beckett, Mercedes Martinez, Candice LeRae, and Bianca Belair, who survived, Bianca did, until the end. There was this great spot where Belair had Billie Kay out on the apron, and Kay is just desperate to hang on and not fall to the floor, and so she grabs onto Bianca Belair's hair, that one long braid that she has, and just holds onto that thing for dear life, like she's climbing the side of a mountain or something. And that thing may well as well be just deemed a lethal weapon at this point. I mean, Billie held onto it as long as she could. She was able to stay in, but she did get whipped with that thing. She got whipped hard with it to the point that she posted photos of her arm after the match, and she had a nice, long, bloody welt. I think two of them, actually, on her arm. But Nikki eliminated Billy for the win. Aleister Black was out next for a match when the Velveteen Dream literally popped up behind him as he was making his entrance and threw him into the ring steps. Props to the production team for the way they shot this. The shot was outstanding. The way he kind of slowly popped up behind Black, like some horror movie villain, but with a slightly better sense of fashion. He threw Black into the ring, tied him up in the ropes. He slapped him a couple of times, told him to say his name, which he still did not. Alistair kicked him away, went for Black Mask, but Dream bailed. Matthew of Botchamania on his Twitter said that the highlight of NXT right now is this feud, and he is absolutely right. And I never thought I would say that. You have Adam Cole out there now as part of a new faction with Red Dragon, and of all the things going on right now on NXT, the thing that I'm into the most and I'm enjoying the most is this slow build with Aleister Black and the Velveteen Dream. And I said the same thing on the show weeks ago. Such a simple story. The two are polar opposites. It just works. And Velveteen Dream has a pretty badass elbow, I have to say. Elbow drop, that is. In the main event, Andrade Cien Almas pinned Roderick Strong with the Hammerlock DDT as they build Almas for an NXT Championship match with Drew McIntyre at TakeOver. Zelina Vega came off the apron at one point with a Hurricanrana on Roddy and sent him flying into the ring steps. That led to the DDT finish. After the match, they wandered over to the announce desk. They stole Mauro Ranallo's headset, and they challenged Drew McIntyre to meet them face-to-face next week. And back in the ring, the Undisputed Era came out to confront Roderick Strong, and Adam Cole handed him an armband as a way to try to, I guess, recruit him into their group. So the build to War Games continues. This Wednesday, the Authors of Pain get their NXT Tag Team title rematch against Sanity. Between the match that I'm sure they're going to be adding between Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream and the War Games match, and looking at the Survivor Series card as it stands right now, and I know it's still early, but looking at the card since they've already laid most of it out, TakeOver is easily the can't-miss show of that weekend. If you forced me, if you said you can only pick one show over the other to watch that weekend, which one would it be? There is no way I choose that Survivor Series show over this NXT show. See if this person answers.
Salamonster.
Is this Noah Mark?
It is I. It is me, Noah Mark.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I mean, you know, I don't usually accept unknown callers on my phone, so pardon me for not picking up early.
Yeah, see, I tried calling this guy before, and he didn't answer his phone, and that's what happens when you call from Skype. It probably comes up on the display like all zeros or all ones or something, right?
I thought you were from a foreign country trying to sell me, you know, life insurance or something.
So what, are you racist? If I'm from some other country, you don't answer your phone?
What's wrong with you? Well, I am Noah.
Racist Noah makes a return. You're on the sound off.
I think that would be xenophobic.
You're everything. You're racist. You're xenophobic. You're all these things rolled up into one. But enough of that. So here's the reason why I'm calling you. See, I didn't warn you. This was a complete impulse call. Reason being, this is the Halloween episode of the Sound Off. You like how I say that, by the way? Halloween episode.
Every year it brings a smile to my face when you say that.
Yes. One of these years I will do a Halloween episode and try to get RVD back on. But I call you for this reason. With it being Halloween this week, I want to get your feedback here because I've talked about this on the show. I'm a big fan of horror movies and the horror genre. And I want to ask you, Noah Mark, what is your all-time favorite horror film?
Oh, God. I'm not going to give you a very good answer because I've never been really into the horror genre. I get scared too easily. So you're probably not going to like... I mean,
I can vouch for this. I've heard him scream like a girl before in various public situations. So I can vouch for this.
I really did enjoy Scream. Now, is that even a horror movie?
Yeah, no, you know that's a horror movie. Well, I guess it would be more of a thriller. I consider it a horror movie, but that's a
Scream,
you know,
2 was good too, but Scream 3 was three. It got crazy. By Scream
well, once
3.
You got past Scream 2, I think it was pretty much all downhill. But I like Scream. Scream is a good choice. All right, you didn't disappoint me. I thought for sure you were going to give me some lame answer and I was going to have to hang up on you, but that's actually a pretty decent answer.
Well, I liked Blair Witch Project also, but is that a horror film?
Not really. Well, come on. No, it's a documentary. It's found footage.
It's a scary movie, I guess. Oh, yeah, it's found footage.
It's found footage, Noah. Come on. Yeah.
So like GTV, it's found footage from the WWE.
Well, that was pretty scary. It is the Halloween. And while we're on the subject of Halloween, I'll float this question to you. Do you have a favorite Halloween song?
Are there Halloween songs?
Well, you know, a song that you would associate with horror, Halloween. It could be ghosts. It could be anything like that.
I mean, I'm going to steal one from Webmaster Mike and just go with Michael Jackson Thriller. Why not?
All right. Well, that's kind of a stock answer there. That is very cliche, but I'll accept it. I thought you were going to say, you know, Ghostbusters or Monster Mash.
Monster Mash.
Exactly. Or
didn't we do a parody for the Monster Mash on your show one year?
I don't think we did. I was actually thinking about doing one for this week's episode, but I couldn't put two and two together here. I couldn't figure it out. But well, let me bring up something that actually matters here, being that I have you on here before I let you go, and that is, of course, that next weekend, next Sunday, is the 10-year anniversary podcast, episode 520. We're going to be doing a live stream on YouTube Sunday night, November 5th, 8 p.m. Eastern. Are you excited? Are you excited for the 10-year anniversary show?
Absolutely. Hey, and you know what? I'll tell you congratulations early because, you know, I've been listening since episode one, and I've been a big fan of yours this whole time. You know, you and I did a show for a year or something right after Rory week on the air. So, you know, I'm proud of you, bro. I really am.
Thank you. And
I really am.
I know. And I know. And I have to say that you've been part of that success too. I mean, people still rant, you know, not rant, but they rave about, you know, some of the clever little intros that we put together, the McMahon's Pastry Palace and all that kind of stuff. And that wouldn't have been possible without your help. So I want to thank you for that. You've also been, you've played an instrumental role here in the history of this show.
Well, you know, we've had some fun roundtables, and that's been good. But I mean, it's the Solid Monster Sounds Off, and you get it's your show. I'm thrilled, honored, and happy to be a part of it in any way that I can, and every once in a while. But it's all from your brain, man. It's all from your mind, and I have to tell you, I'm becoming one of those people that I may just live vicariously through you with professional wrestling because I don't know if I could take it anymore.
Yeah. Well, you're not the only one I've heard that from.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where,
I say it's bad and people are going to wonder what I mean by that. I mean, it's just bad in that there's so much of it and it's so hit or miss. And it's almost exhausting to try to keep up with it. Like, I try to keep up with everything because I talk about it. You don't have to keep up with it if you don't want to, because that's your choice to make. You know, I want to.
I know you talked about this. I'm sorry to interrupt. I know you talked about this already, I'm sure. But I mean, how do you have a great match with AJ Styles and the Demon and then beat him the next fucking day from Kane? That's a horror movie. How do you do that? I don't get it. Oh, I hear McMahon. Oh, he's not beating the Demon. He's beating Finn. Finn's immortal, so it makes sense. Fucking, can you not just put him in that situation? Like,
we're heading into Halloween, and they wanted to put the Halloween character over, and that would be Kane. Kane is a walking, breathing Halloween character.
Did they sell a Kane mask, a couple extra Kane masks, you think, in the last week?
Kane, if there's one thing Kane can use, it's a new mask. I think that mask he's wearing has seen better days. I think you ought to put that to rest and go back to the original mask here.
Well, from what I've seen, pictures of campaigning Kane, there's a new term, campaigning Kane, I guess that mask has the hair attached to it also.
How many versions of Kane have we? Because I coined libertarian Kane a number of years ago.
Right.
And now I see other people using it, but you know, now we have campaigning Kane. I mean, how many versions?
Right.
So if he wins, right, then it becomes Mayor Kane, right? Is that what we call him? Mayor Kane?
Mayor Kane.
Like Mayor McCheese.
We've had Dentist Kane. Mayor McCheese. We've had Dentist Kane. We've had Corporate Kane.
Corporate Kane. That's true. That's true. Yeah. I feel like we're missing one. I feel like there's one more that we're missing, but no. Anything else you want to talk about here before I let you go?
No, I'm excited. You're going to take live calls next week. I'll be on the phones, you know, trying to get people, you know, screened up and teed up for you so that you're ready to go. I think it's going to be a fun show.
Now, look, I mean, we had fun in June with episode 500. We did the live cast then, and that had video. I'm not really so worried about the video portion this time. I want to talk to as many people as we can. We had fun with the phone lines last time, and maybe not so much when the bill came in, but Certainly before that, I enjoyed talking to everybody. And so we'll do that again next weekend. And I'm thinking I'll give away some 10-year anniversary shirts and we'll have fun.
That's good. Well, happy anniversary, Salamanca. I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, we'll continue on with the Halloween episode right now.
All right. Thank you. Now I'm going to let you go. But you be well, and I'll see you next Sunday for the big show.
Hey, be well. Stay safe.
Hey, that's my line. Quit jacking my material.
Goodbye.
I'll talk to you later. Well, as you can probably tell, we had that germ of an idea from our phone conversation, and that led to us actually doing a Monster Mash intro for the show this week, which I think turned out pretty damn well. And I thank Noah again for his work in helping to put that together. And again, he'll be joining us off and on for the anniversary show live next Sunday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you can join. It is time for the Monster Mailbag. Here on the Halloween episode of the Sound Off. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can always send them in to thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Pau Chua from Minneapolis. Do you think the WWE should have done the Raw Under Siege angle with the 205 Live roster instead to get people to take the 205 Live guys seriously and make them feel like a threat, potentially to kill the cruiserweights? Can only wrestle cruiserweights thing that they've done to free some of the guys from 205 Live a little bit, especially Neville. Not saying that they should kill 205 Live, but it probably would put it on the radar. Instead of sending Shane McMahon out there, send Neville out there with the promo of I'm better than being restricted to just fighting guys in my weight class, or send Enzo out there since he's a good promo and effectively do or say the same thing as what Shane did. Yeah, the thing is, like, if they invaded, right, and they beat everybody up just to put 205 Live on the radar, you're back to limiting those guys to their own show. Like, how much mixing can there really be unless guys like Seth Rollins and Finn Balor start wrestling on 205 Live also? And then it's no longer 205 Live. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't think it would have worked with them. The best thing that they could do is just lift this unwritten rule that they have of theirs that, you know, that set, it's not even unwritten. I mean, it's in the name of the damn show, 205 Live. That's the weight limit that they've set. Just lift that. And, you know, just the cruiserweights being kept apart from everybody else on the roster is something that, you know, only allows you to go so far if you're on that brand, if you're on that Raw brand. And it doesn't have to be something you flaunt. It doesn't have to be something you announce. It doesn't have to be something where every cruiserweight is wrestling guys that are, you know, bigger than them and who are not in the cruiserweight division. But at least it would free up guys like Cedric Alexander or Rich Swann or Neville, if he were still around, to wrestle the occasional match with other guys to show that they can hang. And then graduate some of them out of the division and move some new guys in there to take their place. It's like, you know, 205 Live, I'm sure 205 Live on most weeks is a good show. I get emails from you guys sometimes saying, hey, you really should check out this week's show. It was really good. And every now and then I will. But so it's not a matter of, oh man, you know, the show is hot garbage or anything like that. The show doesn't have to be hot garbage. It doesn't have to be a bad show. It just doesn't have anything that really interests me, because it's not positioned as something important. And there's a lot of television, and you have to be... I think a lot of people are very selective in how they kind of, you know, what they dedicate their time to. People may watch Raw, but not SmackDown. People may watch SmackDown, but they've long given up on Raw. I know that they have, because I hear from you guys. I hear from so many people like that who just gave up, and they just listen to shows like this, or they'll watch NXT, but they won't watch the main roster stuff because they can only take so much. But again, it's hard to care too much about those guys because of the way they're presented and the way they're positioned. Which I'm sure WWE doesn't think they're sabotaging them or doing wrong by them. They're putting them in main events on Raw sometimes. They've given the cruiserweights the main event slot at the end of the show sometimes. They think they're probably doing a hell of a job of trying to showcase these guys. But that in and of itself doesn't make them, you know, feel important. And I'm sure all of this had a lot to do with why Neville walked out, because were it not for that, he'd still be there. Taymor from Mississauga, Canada. Do you think that the Raw Survivor Series team for the 5-on-5 match will be lacking star power, excuse me, in comparison to Team SmackDown, as Lesnar, Ambrose, Rollins, and Miz already have other matches, assuming they won't pull double duty? That leaves Roman Reigns, Finn Balor, and Braun Strowman as three main event players for Team Raw, but they are lacking star power for the last two spots, with the only reasonable possibilities being Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle. Well, your definition of star power is very different from mine, buddy. Team SmackDown, on the other hand, seems so stacked that they need qualifying matches just to reach the final five. Also, do you think WWE waited for Raw's retaliation to the invasion until Roman Reigns gets back this week? So when the Raw roster invades, maybe with Shane McMahon in the ring all by himself, the Shield can sneak out from the ring and, or from under the ring, he says, and deliver the triple powerbomb. First of all, I think that that is a great idea. You have this huge brawl breakout backstage on SmackDown. Shane's in the ring looking up at the Tron. He's all alone. And have the Shield. I mean, I wouldn't have the Shield come out from under the ring. I mean, the Shield comes out from the crowd. That's what they do. You have the Shield come out from the crowd, and they powerbomb Shane McMahon and leave him laying. Now, you mentioned that, you know, Roman coming back next week. We don't know that Roman Reigns is coming back this week. In fact, I don't think he is. My understanding is that they're going to evaluate him and Bray and whoever else this Monday, tomorrow night, or not tomorrow night, but tomorrow, they're going to evaluate them and see where they are and if they're cleared to return or if they want to hold them for another week or so. But I saw that they reshuffled some of the cards for the UK shows. They have a UK tour that starts later this week. Roman was supposed to be on there. They had promised a bunch of Shield, six-man matches, and now they've changed that. And they've added Triple H to the shows. So, as of right now, my understanding is Roman Reigns is off the UK tour, which tells me he may not be back this week. So, but in another week or two, I fully expect him to be back on TV, and they can save the next invasion angle for then. As far as Team Raw goes, one name that you did not mention, and I think needs to be in the conversation, is Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe is due back any week now. And so I would think he would be a given to be on Team Raw at Survivor Series. He'll be back in time for Survivor Series. What other match do you put him in if not Team Raw versus Team SmackDown? So he would seem like a given. I honestly think that they may end up sticking with the team that I pitched and that I thought they would do. If you think back to my TLC predictions that I did, I thought that before everybody got sick, one of the purposes of this match was the heels would win, and the Shield would have to go out and find two partners to face those guys again, because it was 3-on-5 at TLC. Well, the Shield goes out, they find two guys to even the odds for Survivor Series, and my suggestion would have been Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. I still think we could get that, we could very well, you know, end up getting that match, but that would require a lot of these guys to pull double duty, because Rollins and Ambrose are already in a match. The Miz is already in a match. So they would have to pull double duty on that show. And I think they will. Because look, how can you not have Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose as part of Team Raw? How can you do that? How can you keep them out of that match? They're two of the biggest names on the brand. And I don't see Kane and Braun Strowman being on the same team. They're either going to have a match, or Kane will be in the Team Raw match, and Braun makes his big return at Survivor Series and destroys Kane, and that's how Kane gets eliminated. It's going to be one of those two scenarios. You've got Kurt Angle. Would Kurt Angle wrestle? I don't know. I mean, Shane McMahon on TV Monday night said, hey, Kurt, bring your gold medal to the Survivor Series. I didn't necessarily take that as, hey, you're going to, you know, I expect that you're going to be wrestling in this match. I don't think he is wrestling on this show. Although, he did just post a photo Kurt did on his Instagram showing him having new ring gear made. It's like, you could kind of see red, white, and blue gear. He's having new tights made, so he is definitely going to wrestle at some point. I figure that's just for him to have in case he gets the call again from Vince McMahon, or it'll be gear for him to wear at WrestleMania. But I don't think he's going to be wrestling at Survivor Series. Kelly from North Tonawanda, New York. How is it that I've lived in New York my entire life? I've never even heard of these places before. Over the past few weeks, Booker T has scrutinized Jason Jordan. I love that word, scrutinized Jason Jordan. Sounds like he vaporized him with like a laser gun or something, for his nepotistic push, claiming that said opportunities are given to him because he's Kurt Angle's son. Do you foresee Booker T getting involved in a storyline with Jordan, Angle, or both? I hope not. God, I hope not. The only way that that would make any sense is if they really do go with the story that Jason Jordan was actually fathered by Kurt Angle and Booker's wife, Charmel, when they did that horrible angle years ago where Kurt basically tried to rape her. I mean, that's let's be honest. I mean, that's what that angle was. And he said he wanted to have bestiality sex with her. This really happened.
Kurt, get out now!
Shut up!
Now, get out!
And I'm not just talking any kind of sex with your wife. That kind of bestiality sex.
For all you people who long for the old days, you need to be very specific because there are periods of those old days that I am perfectly content to leave there and never see again, and that would be one of them. They're obviously not going to bring any of that up, so I think there's zero point to having, you know, Booker T involved. Michael from Toronto, with all of this talk of the MMA Four Horsewomen against the WWE Four Horsewomen, or Ronda Rousey maybe one-on-one against Charlotte, who do you think should win? Putting over the MMA women would completely undermine the sport of professional wrestling, especially since the wrestlers would be losing in a wrestling match. WWE has a precedent for putting over celebrity guests. Would they break that pattern this time around? Well, I mean, therein lies the issue, right? You look at it as the sport of professional wrestling. They look at it as sports entertainment. So they bring in the celebrity. The celebrity usually wins. We saw it with LT beating Bam Bam at WrestleMania. We saw it with Floyd Mayweather beating Big Show at WrestleMania. Even K-Fed has a win over John Cena, although that was at least done in a way to put heat on a wrestling feud with, I guess it was Cena and Umaga at that time. You're not usually bringing a celebrity in to lose or to be embarrassed in these situations. I think that matters less here because by all accounts, these women are legitimately training their asses off for whatever match it is that they're going to end up doing. One of them is already signed to an NXT contract. Shayna Baszler is already signed to be a wrestler and is wrestling on some of the NXT house shows. Another one is married to a wrestler. Currently in NXT, Roderick Strong. Ronda, we know Ronda's a huge wrestling fan. She gets it. That being said, who should win? Without question, 100%, the wrestler should win the match. The goal should be to use the celebrities to get your own stars over. If it's a heel whose job it is to go in there and be embarrassed, then that's one thing, right? So if they were going to do, let's say, they weren't going to do Ronda Rousey against Charlotte. Let's say they wanted to do Ronda Rousey against Stephanie McMahon, which was the rumored match at one point. Obviously, if Stephanie McMahon loses, no big deal. And Stephanie should lose. Stephanie should lose a match like that. But Stephanie is not a full-time wrestler. She doesn't count. That's a completely different situation. Those are two non-wrestlers. I know Stephanie was a champion and all. She's not a wrestler. Okay, that's two non-wrestlers. We're talking active wrestlers on their roster, right? That's what we're talking about here. If WWE takes four of their biggest female stars, all of whom are baby faces right now, okay? So keep that in mind too. As of right now, WrestleMania is a long way away. But as of now, Charlotte, Sasha, Becky, Bayley, all baby faces, right? If they take four of their biggest female baby faces and they job them out to the celebrity crew, that would be among the dumbest things that they have ever done. Vince had it right with Mike Tyson in 98. He didn't wrestle, but he came in and he gave the rub to Steve Austin. That's how it should be done. And yeah, it would have been cool. It was a little disappointing when Tyson came in and they were teasing that they were going to actually announce a match for him. And then, you remember, Vince got interrupted. And, you know, as a younger fan, it's like, holy crap, I'd love to see Mike Tyson against Stone Cold. It would have been cool, but that's an impossible match to book because there is no good finish other than Austin giving Tyson the stunner and just pinning him. And there's a snowball's chance in hell that ever would have happened. To do Tyson and Austin back then with Tyson winning would have been death for Steve Austin. The guy was on the ascent. You don't bring in a boxer and beat him. That would have been idiotic. So if it's horsewomen against horsewomen, the WWE crew should absolutely win. Now, there is a way, and I hate to even say this because I still think the WWE star should win, but there is one way to do it where the MMA women win, but at least it serves to cement a new heel on the WWE side. That would be where the wrestlers have the match, let's say, well in hand, they're well on their way to victory, and someone, and I would go with Sasha Banks, just because I think, I look at those four women, and I think Charlotte is a natural heel, and I think Sasha is a natural heel. Becky and Bayley are the two natural baby faces. So I actually think that Charlotte and Sasha are kind of miscast. I mean, they could be big baby faces, they are right now. Of them, I'd like to see Sasha just get the chance to go heel. We haven't seen heel Sasha, really. I mean, I guess she was doing that team, what was that garbage that they had her doing? Team Unity or something when she first came in? Some nonsense. But for all intents and purposes, she really hasn't been a heel since she came up. But if you saw her work in NXT when she first became the boss and she was just completely full of herself, that worked. That worked. She was such a bitch down in NXT. And it worked. So I'd like to see her go in that direction. So I think Sasha would be the one who turns heel. Now, maybe it's jealousy over Charlotte stealing the spotlight from her or something, but she costs her team the match, goes heel, the MMA ladies win, but only because Sasha Banks handed them the win out of spite for her own team. And then the next night on that post, you know, WrestleMania Raw show, you know, you hand Sasha a mic and you let her go off on everybody. You could do that. You could do that. But I still think it would be a mistake to have them lose. I'm a believer in putting your own people over, not the other people. Chris from Ajax, Ontario, Canada. A lot of Canadians here. With Ric Flair putting out his WWE Mount Rushmore, who would be on your Lucha Underground Mount Rushmore? And here I thought we were finally done with the Mount Rushmore questions, and then Ric Flair brings it back to life. Flair's WWE Mount Rushmore, for those who don't know, is himself, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and The Rock. Or at least that's the graphic that he tweeted out. I highly doubt that Ric Flair put that together himself. I think somebody tweeted it to him, or his people put it together, and then he just sort of tweeted it out from his account. I don't think Ric Flair spends even seconds out of his day thinking, huh, I wonder who's on my WWE Mount Rushmore. Believe me, Ric Flair's thinking about a lot of things. That ain't one of them. But that's what he tweeted out. You know, if I was picking mine, like my personal WWE Mount Rushmore, not a Mount Rushmore based off, you know, in-ring ability and great matches and all that kind of stuff, Flair would not be on. I mean, Flair wouldn't be on a WWE Mount Rushmore anyway, because Flair's time spent in WWE overall was very limited, okay? And he spent more time as like a manager and in the tail end of his career wrestling than he did for that year and a half or whatever it was that he was actually with the company. So on a WWE Mount Rushmore, Ric Flair is not on there. On mine, I would go, me personally, I would go Hogan, Bret Hart, Stone Cold, and The Rock. That would be mine. As far as my Lucha Underground Mount Rushmore, which was your actual question, Dario Cueto has to be front and center. I mean, he is the face of Lucha Underground. There is no Lucha Underground as we know it, I think, without him as a character on that show. So Dario Cueto would be on there front and center. Prince Puma, Pentagon, and Mil Muertes, with Katrina. You got to put the two of them together. Katrina's got to be on there with him. Maybe carve out a little notch for her in his cheek or something. But she needs to be there.
Maharaja!
Ali, from Camden, New Jersey. What are your thoughts on John Cena not turning heel because of his clothing line at Kmart? Yeah, so a little history on this. I don't remember the episode, but I know I've talked about Kevin Eck, who used to write for WWE, blogging. This was after he left the company. He started a blog, and he would blog out stories about his time as a writer. And one of the stories he shared was the time that John Cena almost turned heel, which would have been around 2011, 2012 or so. Cena was on board. He was all for the idea. He even had new music and new gear made. There was a whole thing at the time where people were trying to figure out There was one of these WWE trademark things where they file trademark applications for some new name. And it was something like Fear My Name or something. And people really did their research and tried to put two and two together here, because I guess there was an episode of Total Divas where John Cena actually was just goofing off, and he was dressed in this wrestling, like amateur wrestling looking singlet, and it had the words "Fear My Name" on the front of it and the name Cena on the back. And people were like, wait a minute, is that the gear? Is that the gear that he had made? I can't imagine that would have been the gear, because he looked ridiculous. Although maybe he would have worn it just to get heat. I don't know. But it was actual wrestling gear. And I can't picture John Cena going heel and wearing this thing. But anyway, there were all these conspiracy theories about whether or not that might be the actual gear he had made. I had heard that he gave the gear that he made away to somebody in NXT. So, you know, whatever the case is, it didn't happen. Even though he was on board, it didn't happen. And Vince got cold feet and he scrapped the whole thing. Cena, I think, even talked about it on his podcast with Chris Jericho that he did once. The turn would have been before the match, the first match with The Rock at WrestleMania, which he was a heel going into anyway, because you're wrestling The Rock in The Rock's first singles match in 8 years in his hometown of Miami. You know, there was no way John Cena was walking in there as a babyface. Well, a few weeks ago, Kevin Eck was a guest on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which I've had the pleasure of guest hosting a couple of times with Wade. And he told the story that they had the Cena heel turn planned. Cena was on board. They were going to go all in with Sheamus as the new top babyface in place of Cena, which would have been a fucking disaster. And then someone tipped off Vince McMahon that, hey, Kmart's about to start this John Cena clothing line that we've been talking about. And Vince was like, oh shit, we can't turn this guy now. He's got a clothing line coming out of Kmart. And that was the end of that. Now, the only thing I'm confused with by that story that Eck told is the timeline on all of this. Because when Eck told the story before, first of all, one time he said Walmart when he was telling the story, not Kmart, but yeah, okay, maybe he just misspoke. But I went back to see where the Kmart line, or when the Kmart line launched, like what year. The Kmart line launched in late 2013. Like, they announced it in the middle of the year, and by the end of 2013, the line launched. That was well after both WrestleMania matches against The Rock. So I'm a little confused by the timeline on all of this, but I don't doubt the story. I mean, Cena has admitted that they were going to do a heel turn, and Vince got cold feet. We know this happened. I will say this, if the plan was to go with Sheamus, though, as the new top babyface, they made the right move by not turning John Cena. Because there is not a chance in hell that that would have worked with Sheamus as the top babyface in the company. So, Vince made the right call on that one. I guess he didn't make the right call if he was going to go with fucking Sheamus, but fate intervened and fate made the right call. I should clarify that. Fat Mac from Minnesota. With my favorite holiday, Halloween, just around the corner, I'm curious what your favorite Halloween Havoc match is. Can't wait for the 10th anniversary show. Well, when I did my top 15 WCW greatest matches countdown, there were two Halloween Havoc matches that I included on that list. Goldberg against Diamond Dallas Page from 1998, and Eddie Guerrero against Rey Mysterio from 1997. Those would be my top two, with number one being Eddie and Rey. There is no better Halloween Havoc match than Eddie Guerrero against Rey Mysterio from 1997. Vader and Cactus Jack had a good brawl. They had a good match back in 93. But I've seen those two have better matches than that one. Eddie and Rey was just on another level. And this month actually marks the 20th anniversary of that match. 20 years later, and that match still holds up today. Jesse from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I think we're covering every province in Canada here this week on the show. That and North Tonawanda, New York over there. Shawn Michaels is regarded as Mr. WrestleMania, but with Survivor Series coming up in a few weeks, who is your Mr. Survivor Series and why? My Mr. Survivor Series would be Randy Orton. I mean, I took about 30 seconds when I got this question to think, okay, who's my Mr. Survivor Series? I said, well, it ain't Brock Lesnar since he's, you know, 0-3. It's Randy Orton. The dude lights it up at Survivor Series. His first three shows, all three, he was the sole survivor for his team. Team Bischoff over Team Austin in 2003, which was a great freaking match, by the way. Sole survivor. Team Orton over Team Triple H in 2004, Soul Survivor. Team SmackDown over Team Raw in 2005, Soul Survivor. I believe he's undefeated in WWE title matches on that show, even though I don't remember those matches being all that good. In fact, the match with Big Show back in 2013 was hot garbage. Last year, he and Bray Wyatt were the sole survivors for Team SmackDown. So when you look at his body of work on that show, I think it's safe to call him Mr. Survivor Series. I mean, it depends on you know, what that phrase means to you. Again, it's a subjective thing. But if it's all about work rate and having great matches, then maybe you say Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, if you're going strictly by that, then Shawn Michaels is Mr. WrestleMania and he's Mr. Survivor Series. I think he would be another fine choice. Me personally, though, I would go with Randy Orton. Jay from the UK. Before CM Punk cut his famous pipe bomb promo, I was about to stop watching WWE. I felt the product had become stale and disinteresting, and there was nothing controversial about the show. That was until Punk cut that promo. Would you have stopped watching wrestling also if there was no pipe bomb? I feel it opened the door for more realism and an influx of independent wrestlers being signed by WWE. What do you think? Well, a lot of people listening to this probably think that's precisely why the pipe bomb was so bad, because it helped lead to an influx of indie star. People just can't accept the fact that, you know, there's a lot of really talented guys out there who aren't all jacked to the gills, 6'4", and they just shit on anything and everything that they do. And they can't accept that the company would be in far worse shape right now if guys like Punk and Daniel Bryan didn't come along at the time that they did. They just, you know, they have blinders on and they just refuse to admit it. And I'm not saying that those are the guys that would lead them to the promised land and Nielsen ratings of 4, 5, and 6. I'm just saying the company, I think, has far benefited more than not by having those guys on the roster, in a lot of ways, you know, carry the company. You know, shame on the company for not being able to find or create that next really big, larger-than-life star like an Austin or a Rock or a Goldberg or somebody like that. But thank God they had guys like Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan to at least, you know, put on entertaining matches on the show, because if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have much of anything. But I don't, you know, I don't agree, again, I don't agree with that point of view. But no, I would still be watching. I mean, you know, it would take a lot for me to just sort of throw my hands up and give up. They were already building to Rock and Cena at WrestleMania the following year, which was a big program. I'm sure there would have been something else for me to take an interest in, even if the rest of the product was shit. Punk or no Punk, I would still be watching. John from Cincinnati. Much like you, I've been a wrestling fan for as long as I can remember, and I'm in my 40s now. I'm now recreating the Monday Night Wars courtesy of the WWE Network, and I'm noticing and looking at things differently now than I did in my 20s, and the whole thing makes for a very unique experience. For example, I remember everybody making such a big deal about how cool and edgy the NWO was, but now I look at them and think, how the hell did these jagoffs get big enough to damn near bankrupt WWE? I also noticed WWE was actually putting on a better show. With the benefit of hindsight, do you see the two companies the same as you did when you were younger? What do you see differently now? Well, I'm not watching the old shows week to week the way you are. I think that would be kind of cool. I just don't have the time to do that. But I'm sure if I was doing what you're doing, there's plenty of stuff I could pick apart now. One thing I noticed is how much worse the actual wrestling was back then. Just like in general on Raw. More so Raw than Nitro. Nitro, I'm sure the cruiserweights had a lot to do with the high quality of a lot of matches on that show. Guys like Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio and Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho and Dean Malenko. I mean, those guys were putting on clinics, you know, every single week so that you can, in a different segment, have all the old guys, you know, out there making jokes and cutting promos. That's what made Nitro, I think, such a must-see show. It had a good mix. It had a really good variety of different things. You wanted big names? You got big names. You wanted hot matches? You had hot matches. You could pretty much get a little bit of everything. And generally, the wrestling on Raw was pretty shitty, especially in the middle of the card, like the undercard stuff. The other thing is, when I go back and I watch those old Monday Night shows, I have a better appreciation now for WCW than I did back then, because back then I was a WWF guy, like, through and through. I had many a debate with my friend who was the opposite. He loved the NWO and he loved WCW, and you know, we'd be leaving class or whatever, and we'd be having arguments about which show was better. And I'm like, ah, you're out of your mind. You can watch that stuff. I mean, I knew what was going on Nitro. It's not like I didn't watch. I would flip over and see Sting and the NWO. And, you know, it was both a lot of fun and very frustrating to flip like that, because you couldn't just put something on DVR, you know? you really did have to make a choice. Which do you want to watch? If you had, let's say, a different room with a VCR, you could tape the other show, but not everybody had, you know, was able to do that. So that was very frustrating. It's like, think the world we live in now, in terms of DVR, in terms of just hopping on YouTube or Dailymotion, or even the network to go find whatever you want to watch, it just wasn't like that back then. It's actually really amazing to think how different things were ever since YouTube in 05. How different things are now, just in terms of technology and our access to that stuff as compared to back then. But I was a WWF fan. I was a WWF guy back then, more than WCW. I was aware of everything going on in the other show, but I could never fully appreciate what they were doing. And the same goes for those old Saturday night shows on TBS. You know, the mothership, as Dusty Rhodes used to call it. And I'm talking forget the Monday Night Wars, I'm talking about going back even to like the mid-90s. There was a lot of really good classic stuff on there, but I never appreciated it at the time. I would flip it on occasionally and I'd be like, you know, I just had no interest. And now, I mean, for God's sakes, I long to go back to days where we had, you know, shows like that. So I guess with the benefit of hindsight, that those would be the things that I notice. But without watching it week to week and sort of recreating it the way you are, that, you know, I can't really say for sure. Manuel, we'll end with this. Manuel from Colorado. I recently listened to the Stone Cold podcast with Tommy Dreamer, and he mentioned Dusty Rhodes approaching him to do an ECW invasion. Apparently, this was before the demise of ECW and WCW, and Eric Bischoff wanted to do an angle where ECW invaded WCW since they were getting their asses kicked by WWE. Tommy says he viewed it as helpful for both companies, but Heyman rejected the idea, saying Vince would not like that. Do you know if WCW ever reached out to ECW to collaborate before both companies collapsed? Also, do you think an invasion would have been beneficial to both WCW and ECW, or would it have only delayed the death of both companies? This is the first I'm hearing about that. It would have only delayed the inevitable. I mean, WCW was losing so much money and was so mismanaged by that point. Even a strong ECW, right? Even a strong ECW couldn't save it. And ECW was still number three in the pecking order, even with all of WCW's woes at the time. It would not have changed anything other than to just piss off Vince McMahon, which probably means that Paul Heyman would not have been welcome the way he was in 2001. And I do wonder if that was on Heyman's mind. I mean, Heyman was Heyman. And you had to know that he could see the writing on the wall. And there was never any formal closure until One Night Stand many years later. There was never any formal closure. And there were a lot of very bitter people in ECW, bitter at Heyman for what happened there. When they had their last show, which was a live event, I think, in January of 01. And there he is at the very beginning of March, as a big surprise, popping up on Monday Night Raw as the new announcer. And it left all those ECW guys in a... I mean, there were a lot of ECW guys that didn't even know that ECW was done until they saw Heyman on Raw, and then they knew. That's pretty shitty. So I think that Heyman making that comment to Dreamer, you know what? He probably knew. He's like, yeah, we don't want to piss off... Of course he doesn't want to piss off Vince. He wants to make sure that he has a job. If ECW is no more, he's not going to go piss off Vince McMahon. He's looking out for himself. So it makes sense. You piss off Vince McMahon. If they do that angle, I don't think Heyman gets that position in 01. Maybe they eventually bring him in, but he doesn't come in when he did in 01. And he had to know that. So that wraps up the Monster Mailbag here for this Halloween episode of The Sound Off. A lot of good questions this week. You can keep emailing me. We will do questions on the show next week, even though it's a live format and we'll do phone calls. I will still do some mailbag questions, so by all means, email them to me. And again, if you want to be immortalized on the 10-year anniversary podcast, the way many of you were for episode 500 back in June, You can make a donation this week. This is the week to do it. Countdown is on. You could always go to PayPal, the PayPal button on thesolidmonster.com, make a donation there. You can also support the show by using our Audible link, buying a t-shirt. There is a 10-year anniversary shirt up in our store, by the way, on Pro Wrestling Tees. But again, you guys were in monster mode for episode 500, so let's see if we can do that again. Next Sunday, November 5th, 8 p.m. Eastern, live on youtube.com/thesolidmonster. That is where the show will be streaming from. There will not be a normal show dropping in the feed earlier in the day. This is the show for next Sunday. It's just going to be delayed until later in the night. And if you can't listen live for any reason, if you're, you know, many hours ahead in another country, I get it. I understand. You can listen to the show on the download. That show will be posted to the feed early Monday morning. Once I am done streaming and I can go back and upload it, it will be on the feed through Podbean and iTunes and Stitcher and all the usual methods, all the platforms that you're used to using. It's just going to get there a little bit later to accommodate for the live format. I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it's hard for me to really sit here and think it's been that long I've been sitting here yakking about wrestling like this. If you would have told me 10 years ago when I did that first show, which was 7.5 minutes long and is on YouTube, by the way, if you want to listen to it, if you would have told me that 10 years later, I'd be sitting here for 2 hours or 2.5 hours every single week still doing this, I would have laughed in your face. But here we are, and I enjoy the hell out of it. I love doing it. It's pretty much now gotten to the point where it consumes all of my free time. It just completely consumes my life. I have, you know, some people say, well, you know, yeah, you have the time to dedicate to it. I mean, this is what you do for a living. I'm like, I have a full-time job. There are people who actually don't know that. And they think all I do is sit here and do this, which in a perfect world, I would love to. I have all these ideas in my head of things I'd love to do above and beyond what I do. I just don't have time for it. And, you know, crunching the numbers and all that, I am far from being in a position to quit my job and do nothing but this. But between the job, between this, which is basically a second job for me now, it just consumes every aspect of my life. But I enjoy it. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the feedback I get from you guys and the gratification I get when I hear positive things from you or somebody buys a shirt or makes a donation or whatever it may be. So it's been a fun 10 years. We're going to have some fun next weekend. We'll take your phone calls. I mean, the number, as we get closer to the show, I'll put the phone number out there on Twitter, and it'll be there in the video. You'll see it in the layout, the graphic that'll be on screen. So you can call in then. And if it's busy, keep calling. I'm sure it's going to be busy. We had, I wish I had the number in front of me. When the 500th show back in June was over, I checked the stats, and we had something, and Noah can correct me, it was something like 10,000 calls. Like, literally, there were 10,000 either calls or attempted calls made in the 4.5 hours that we were on the air. It was insane, which is why my bill was so large. I'm not planning on going 4 hours again this time, but whatever it is, we'll have fun. So until then, that'll be episode... And by the way, one of the reasons I'm doing the show on Sunday night next weekend as opposed to Saturday night like I did back in June is because I'm going to a wrestling show next Saturday. There's actually a show... I'm telling you, man, Brooklyn has become a hotbed for wrestling. I don't know what it is, but all of these independent shows... I'm not even talking like when WWE comes to Barclays. I'm talking like all of these other like independent shows that are coming to these little areas in Brooklyn in these American Legion halls. And the show I'm going to next weekend is at like a Catholic church... and I'm going with a buddy of mine, and they have a bunch of names on the card. Billy Gunn is going to be on the show, and Matt Stryker, and there's like half a dozen other names that you guys would all know who are going to be on this show. So that's where I'm going to be on Saturday, and I could talk about that then when I do the show on Sunday. I'll let everybody know how the show is. So I look forward to it. Be well. Stay safe. Enjoy your Halloween this Tuesday. Those of you with kitties, I know we'll enjoy going out and doing the trick-or-treating. Check for razor blades, right? That's the old advice. Check for... Who does that, by the way? Who puts razor blades in kids? Some sick fucks out there. You know, a lot of crazy people out there who do a lot of really crazy shit. That's why I don't have kids. Now you know. Now you know the reason I don't have kids. Because I don't want razor blades in their candy. So there you go. Until next time, be well, stay safe. I'll see you for the 10-year anniversary next weekend. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad,
and the Ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now, for all you know. No time for pants.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.